Okay, so good evening and welcome to Aspira Delaware Charter Operation Board meeting. We have a couple personnel and strategy discussions, so I would like to open for a motion to move to executive session. Do I have a motion?
Motion to move into executive session, Pesci.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, let's move to executive session. So Greg? Great. So we're returning to public session. Do I have a motion to return to public session, please?
So moved, Donald.
Do I have a second?
Second, Pesci.
All those in favor?
Aye.
So we'll move to the public session. Thank you, everybody, and welcome back to the Aspira Delaware Charter Operation Board meeting for the month of August. We'll quickly review the agenda. We'll have, there's no, I guess, actions out of the executive session. So we'll review agenda and approve the meeting minutes for June. And we'll move to the financial report. So Greg will lead that discussion. Also give us an update on from the operations committee, particularly as it pertains to our new facilities for the high school. And then we move to the head of school report. And included in that report, there are some policies approval. So we'll make that part of the head of school report. Any other changes or updates to the agenda? And Greg, do you have the meeting minutes?
That's what I'm looking for. I think I do. Can you see that?
Yes. I need to scroll down a little bit. I think the documents were sent prior. So any updates to the June meeting minutes?
Lord Ace, did you see the X's? New director effective June. I'm not sure if Yones meant to put those X's or if we need to fill in names.
Oh, yes. That needs to be updated. Okay. Good catch, Tara. Yes.
So new director, I don't know who.
Anna is the new parent representative.
And then it says new director. Is that Rebecca Penix-Statson after Alberto?
Yes.
Okay.
So those were the two that, those would be the corrections to the meeting minutes. So great.
Okay.
Anything else? So can I get a motion to approve agenda as submitted and the June meeting minutes with the updates as discussed?
A move that we accept the minutes for June with the corrections as noted.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
I'm sorry.
Great.
Aye. Second?
Guillermina.
Okay. Thank you.
So Greg, financial reports.
Okay. We're going to start with June. Let me see here. Well. So we have a few reports. We'll do June and then we'll do July, which is the first report for the new fiscal year. And then we'll actually do the preliminary budget. So again, for the new board members, it's the same format all the time. So obviously for June, it puts us 100% for the fiscal year, which was last year was fiscal year 20. So for state, our budget was 8.5 million. We ended up with 8.6. Obviously, that's favorable. We were 101% or 104,000 over. For local, 7.445 million to budget. We came in at 7.595. That was because of some grants that we received, 102% or 140, almost 150,000 favorable. And the federal, The budget was 1.43. We came in at 1.64. We're 114%, 37,000 favorable. So from a revenue perspective, actually we had a great year. We came in at almost 465,000 to the good, 103% of budget, 17.86 million. As I always do, I'll get into the expenses in a little bit. Our expenses, the budget was 17.26 million. We came in at 17.36. One unfavorable, which is anything that's 25% above budget, was the HVAC replacement at the high school. Really, we were over budget because it's the first time in history that we've ever finished construction on time, I will say. In the month of June, we spent 1.446 million. When we look at the line graph, you see that obviously we had a great year. So the red line has a nice gap under the blue line. So we didn't spend more money than we had. And then nothing changed on our local funding update. That is your school district money that we get, usually all of it by January 1st. But that hasn't changed all year after we got our final load. So we're 100%. And then I'm going to ask Lewis to talk a little bit about this. Through some recommendations, we did update the financial report. So you'll see a couple, another new tab with some highlighted points here. Actually, so we can track our available cash for the high school. And basically, this report, or this page right here, this shows all the money. So it includes all the carryover from the previous fiscal year, all the new revenue that we picked up during the year, and then obviously all of our expenses. But basically the highlighted buckets here, as you can see, it's grant money, local construction, a little bit of money in the capital campaign, $14,000. And then the big $1 million grant that we got last year through DOE, which is actually a federal grant for charter expansion. Lewis, I don't know if you want to add anything, but I added this line here. This will be on every report going forward. So that gives you an idea. Go ahead, Lewis.
So effectively, as you got, everyone's aware, we are pursuing the high school. And so one of the things that, you know, both from just a committee perspective, from a financial oversight committee to the capital campaign committee to the high school building committee, right? We were trying to just get our arms around, at the end of the day, how much cash do we have in our total cash bucket, you know, allocated for the high school. Allocated. And that's what this bottom line down here really represents at this point in time, of how much cash we were able to actually have and how much cash do we actually use for the high school, so that as we are tracking, you know, the targets that we have for the capital campaign and the cost of the high school, we just have better oversight on being able to laser in on where we are from a capital perspective. And that's really what it's trying to point to. And then, as Greg pointed out, the components, everything in yellow are the components of that sum, you know, on row 202.
Okay, so then we get to this tab. This is a new tab, and it's basically, I think it's a great picture of what we're doing, but these are the grants that we go after. So you'll see, obviously, we included fiscal year 20. This is a fiscal year 20 report, but it has all the grants that we've already been, I'll just say, promised or awarded, and then some that are outstanding that we have not gotten any notice on yet, but also we'll be going after Longwood in the spring.
Yep.
That gives you an idea of potential additional revenue. Yep. And, you know, the goal here obviously is, you know, I hope by the end of this year, when we get into the fiscal year 21 reports, that we've got, you know, verbiage all the way down here or down here. That means we're collecting a lot of money in grants.
Yeah.
But again, it's just a starting point, another visual to show us what the potential is.
Yeah.
because obviously the high school is going to have some good expense to it.
Yeah, and to the other point is, you know, these extra breakouts, you will see these funds that, you know, through the grants and through those efforts that are really going to be helping drive how we raise funds for the high school. You're going to see this information flow in that summary page that Greg has from a revenue perspective. This is just another tab breaking out, you know, the specific grants that aggregate and eventually flow through the financials at some point in time. But again, it's the mechanism for us to just make sure and ensure that we're going after where we are and that we're just having the appropriate level of oversight on the efforts for the capital campaign, where we are, how we're tracking there. Again, it's just another tab and another way for us to just track it to make sure we know where we stand as we make the efforts towards the high school from a capital perspective.
Thank you, Louis. Okay, so then here's our expense detail. So again, it's laid out the same way every month and every year. Total salaries for the year, our budget was $6.45 million. We came in right about there, 100%. We were $27,000 over. And when you look at the unemployment costs or OECs, the budget's $3.57 million. We came in a little under, $3.45 million or 97%. Total travel, which includes our bus transportation contract, which you see is about $1 million. The budget was $1.045 million. We came in at $1.014 or 97%. And as always, I like to point out that any comments I put to the right for anything that looks a little high or even low, which I put in the green. For total contracted services down here, budget's $2.29 million or almost $2.3. We came in at $2.56. Again, a lot of it's because of the high school construction, which you'll see the big, you know, that's $300,000, $330,000 over. But we were 107% there. Then for total supplies materials, $908,000 was a budget. We came in at $745,000 or 82%. Total capital outlay equipment, $110,000 was a budget. Came in at $186,000, and I noted the HVAC units at the high school. And total capital outlay property, $2.88 million, came in at $3.03 or 105%. Grand totals, $17.26 million was our budget. Came in at $17.36 or 101%. So overall, you know, the grants obviously helped. We did have some decreased expenditure because the school closed, which we also had some decreased revenue, but we had a solid year. You know, we increased our carryover, as you can see, to $1.9 million, which you'll see on the July report as we go into fiscal year 21. I know that's pretty quick. Is there any question in June report, the last one of FY20. All right, hearing none, I'm going to move to the July report. So this is, again, the first month of the new fiscal year, which puts us at 8% through the year. You see, I have all the board members added now. So we'll start with revenues. The budget this year is $9.26 million for state. We have 7.3 or 80%, and that's basically because we get a preload from the state when the system opens up in July, based on our May 1st count of last year. Our local, you'll see, is very low, but it's very normal. $5.78 million of budget. We have $116,000. But we obviously have no school district funding, which is a big piece of this. And we won't start seeing local school district transfers until probably I'm hoping some in September, but the bulk of them will probably be in October, the preloads. And then the federal, that's basically all these buckets here. That's our consolidated grant, which we have the totals, and we hope that it'll be approved. But we've already submitted it. So as soon as it's approved, we'll get that money loaded. But obviously, it's blank right now. $605,000 is a budget, so we have none of that. So right now, we have, again, a budget overall, $16.66 million. We have $7.5 million, or 48%. But I just want to reiterate, there's no concerns here because this is exactly the way it works with schools, public schools, and the way charter schools get funded. So we're always a little bit light when we get started, but we will certainly see all the budgeted money from the state, the school district, and the consolidated grants. For expenses, I'll get into the detail. For $15.65 million is a budget. We're at 3.03, or 19%. As you can see, one unfavorable. That's because we paid a $1.3 million annual debt service as soon as the books open in July. We're a good pay. And we spent $3.03 million. We can't even look at this graph because there's no data points yet. And in our local funding update, again, we've got no local school district transfers, but we hope to get the billing, which is a notice of transfers, in the next couple weeks.
Hey, Greg.
This just shows. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Greg. One thing, and I don't want to gloss over it real quick because it's a lot of information, especially as everyone's seeing it for the first time. So the bond covenant that we had just talked about previously, every year in the beginning of the year, we pay the interest and principal on that bond, and we do it in the beginning of the year. And so that's the $1.3 million that went out the door right away to our bond holders. So that happens in the beginning of the year, and you'll always see that as an unfavorable until closer to the end of the year. But that you'll see that every single year. So our expenses will always look like we've overspent, but it's $1.3 million out the door to pay our investors, to pay our bonds, and so that we always ensure we always have that payment ready for them as soon as the beginning of the year. So I don't want to gloss over that point. Given previous conversations.
Thank you. So as I mentioned, this page here just represents all the carryover money and everything we've received to date, which is $9.4 million. We spent, again, $3.03. We do have $77,000 in encumbered funds, and basically that's a result of, we do a lot of school supplies and curriculum orders right when the books open, that as soon as we can cut POs because we have to order supplies and materials. This is very typical of what we do every year. Again, for the high school, I said this carry over. This $21,000 actually represents payroll. The charter school expansion grant, part of that money was to be allocated towards salary at the high school, and that actually is for some of the facilities chief costs. So, nothing really here to talk about. This page doesn't change. We haven't gotten any new awards, and we haven't applied for any other grants that I'm aware of. So then we get into the expenses. This July actually was a 3-payroll month. We have 2 3-payroll months every fiscal year. So the budget for salaries is $6.5 million. We spent $758,000, or 12%. Unemployment costs, $3.7 million. We spent $368,000, or 10%. You'll see a lot of low numbers going forward now until we get a little bit later in this report. But total travel, you see we haven't spent a dime. Nothing's been moving, obviously, and certainly no kids. So $1.061 million is a budget. Zero is where we're at. Token Tracked Services. 2.0 million is a budget. With our little bit of encumbered money, we spent almost 498,000 or 25%. Then total supplies materials, 729,000 is a budget. With our encumbered money, 92,000 is what we spent, or 13%. And then total capital outlay equipment, 145,000 is our budget. With the encumbered money, we spent 56,000 and 39%. And total capital outlay property, 1.48 million is a budget. As you can see, we spent for our debt services, 1.337%. Grand total, our budget this year, 15.65 million. With the encumbered money, we spent 3.1 or 21%. Again, it's higher. It's high based on being 8% through the fiscal year, but it's very typical of the way we operate as a school. Any questions on that before we move to the preliminary budget? All right. So for those that are new on the board, again, it's the way we operate as a public school or charter school in Delaware. We operate on a preliminary budget for the first 6 months. And then after, now what will be, used to be the September 30th count, after November 13th, we'll be locked in for our funding. But I will present a final operating budget in January, which is what we do every year. The change of this page. Talk about some key assumptions. Projected September 30th enrollment is 1,047 students, and I know we're going to be there. Revenue projections include carryover of last year, fiscal year, $21.9 million. Revenue projections assume minimal donations for FY21. State funding projections based on our preload, which I mentioned earlier that we did get our preload from the state. Then our local school district fundings projections based on $400 less per student of our FY20 funding rate. And the reason we did that, because most schools closed down in March. Unfortunately, the way it works with charter schools, our local school district funding is not based on revenue, which it should be. It's actually based on a school district's operating expenses. I have great news on that later, but that's the way and again, a lot of my peers do the same thing because obviously it's tough to predict what the impact was to local school districts. We know we had less operating expense, but they did as well. So, but again, I have some great news on that a little bit later. School generated fund increased due to school not offering on-site extended care programs. Obviously, that's be represented in our local buckets when I get into that on the next page. Revenue projections include $485,000 in recently awarded grants, which is good news. And then I think all of you know we started off the school year. We froze salaries because we wanted to see, again, what our funding is going to be. And then expenditures include the balance of the high school construction costs. So, again, for the new board members, we follow a budget model that we actually adopted from Newark Charter like back in our first year, and it's been very successful for us. This is the targets that we follow. And like any other business, our salaries and OECs, they're always the highest expense you're going to have. What's interesting, and I don't count, you know, a one-time cash flow of money, which would be a grant, okay? So I exclude that, but our FY21 preliminary operating budget is pretty much dead in line with our 20 operating budget. As you can see, each percent falls well within the range, the allowed range. So we're, I think, in good shape here. Do I have any questions on this or the assumptions before I move on?
No, I don't have a question. I just want to make a point that, you know, this budget model that we that was established, you know, had come from other charter schools and some very fiscally conservative charter schools that do very well financially. So it's a model that's been not just proven for us here at Espira, but is also adopted across kind of the charter network.
Okay, so for the revenue, now you see it's a little different. We actually break it out in each type of revenue stream within the buckets. The 05213, that's basically our pre-lit or our state funding. But just to point out here, I always show the previous year's budgets, operating budgets. It's a good comparison. But that's the target, and I'm confident we're going to be there. That's 100% enrollment target, by the way. So you'll notice I highlighted a few. This whole, you can see from here all the way down is all our state funding. Anything that's in red is carryover. So we don't add that into new revenue. But I highlighted some of these buckets because this all started back when ESSA was approved. So we're now, last year we had to change expense coding. This year we have to change revenue appropriations or buckets. So it looks a little different, even though it's still state funding, but it gets split out. The one big piece, the charter transportation, that used to be in 05213, but it's now a separate appropriation. So that's where I have to show it. We now have what's called charter exclusion. So what we have to do now, any of the 05213 money that is actually being used for capital expense, which for those of you who don't know, charter schools have a lot more leeway with their funding because we get no capital funding. So we're allowed to use 05213 funding, which is based on your student count, to pay debt and capital expenses. But now, because of the way it has to be reported, we now have to show it in a different bucket. Now, we don't get more money for it. We basically, you'll see in the reports going forward, it basically comes out of this bucket. So it's not new revenue, it's just money that gets shifted. So as we have to pay a certain expense, we have to move the money within within the state appropriation. That makes sense. Child safety awareness, that was part of last year's budget. The budget that was approved this year. It's minimal money, but it's a little new money, and it was added just for child safety. It's a few cents per child, or like $2.50 per child. And then, you know, the big difference you'll see this year, not the big difference. We didn't get a great deal of money, like $25,000, but this was one of the budget cuts from last year because of the pandemic. So overall for a subtotal for state, I'm projecting $9.26 million. So with the local, now, again, we always talk state, local, and federal. Again, it's all broken out. All the red is carryover from last year. But the big difference you're going to notice here is, you can see it up in my formula bar, I always budget basically based on last year's revenue because it's safe. Typically, it increases, budgets increase, you know. But given the pandemic, we knew that we were going to take a hit. So we obviously needed to account for that. So I actually lowered it, which is significant. And I know Newark Charter did the same in other charter schools because I hate to say it's like, you know, we were budgeting blindly, but this was a year that was unlike any other. And we knew that, again, operating expenses were actually going to decrease, which meant our revenue would decrease. I'll talk more about that in a minute. This is, you'll see a difference. This other local, 98,000, this is school generated revenue. Well, because we already know there's a potential of losing many, many school days. When we don't operate as a school in a normal environment, we lose $7,000 a day. I know that's hard for some people to believe, but we have a very robust extended care program. We serve a lot of meals and we have summer camp, but we bring in, you know, I'll just say as a business, we bring in a lot of school generated revenue. So I cut it in half just based on, we don't really know how many school days we're going to lose. And I cut the extended care, I'm sorry, the ECDC, which is our child care center. I also cut the before and after care school program. So again, it's something we have to do. And I also reduce this, even though this is a meal program, even though we are going to be serving meals, we're going to be using school buses starting Monday morning, and we're actually going to be serving kids, students, three meals a day, not only breakfast and lunch, but also dinner. And we'll do that on every school day. But it's a little hard to project because, again, we need participation. And I know it's going to be very fluid over the first couple of weeks, but our participation rate right now, I believe, is less than 100 students. But we'll keep a close eye on these local or these school-generated buckets, if you will, as we go through the next few months. The summer camp, you can see the big difference here. So our summer camp, you know, our revenue, obviously summer camp starts in June and goes July and August. So really what you're seeing here is just a little bit of June that would be left. We lost it all for the summer that was coming out of July and August. But hopefully we'll be able to get ramped up and we'll have a full summer camp next year. Then donations, again, this is donations to capital campaign. We keep it low, we hope it's higher, but I know this pandemic has cost everybody. And then local grants, we know we did get awarded two grants. So that's obviously a positive. So right now we've got $485,000 that's already been committed and we've already received some of it. So that's a positive. So overall, subtotal local, you'll see it's a lot lower than last year, which was $7.45 million. We're budgeting $5.7 million right now, or almost $5.8. And with the federal, again, it's basically your consolidated grant, which is this Title I all the way down to Title IV. We already know what those numbers are. The red is a carryover. We did get some emergency relief funding, which is great. We had some that carried over from the end of last year, but we're not getting $1 million grant that we got last year because we're not eligible, but we did carry over some of that money. But for new revenue for federal, $605,000 is a budget. But again, it's really because we're not budgeting the grant that we got last year. So overall, right here, all new revenue, none of the carryovers, counted, $17.57 million. And then with the expenses, I'll get into those again in great detail in a minute, $15.66 million, which Lewis had mentioned it. This is the tightest budget I think we've ever had. It's basically a $4,000 increase of carryover from last year, which is extremely tight. But again, a lot of it's because we don't know what our local school generated revenue is going to be because of, we don't know how much of our programs we're going to be able to operate. But it is in the black, and we do make the requirement of, that's the minimum that we would have to carry over because we have to be able to carry over the salary accruals. Teachers get paid 26 pays, so four of their pays from last year are actually in July and August of this fiscal year.
Yeah. Go ahead. No questions, but just want to point out that if you think about the budget and the approach that we've taken, you know, what we've really tried to do is be conservative on any kind of variable revenue that we know we have, primarily, you know, the school generated revenue piece of it. And to Greg's point, our financial responsibility by in terms of how much cash we need to make sure we always have on hand is at least 4 pays for the teacher, which really helps us establish a minimum cash that we always need to have on hand, regardless of where we are in kind of the financial cycle for the school year. So, you know, I think the team did a really great job of making sure that we had a really conservative budget in that regard.
Sounds like LJ is having a blast.
yeah, too many fighting cartoons. So no more of that.
Craig, I have a question.
Yes.
As a parent, I'm being solicited by summer school programs that are extending their weeks, and businesses that are calling themselves remote learning safety centers, like the Christiana skating rink, and where our kids go, they take Kung Fu. They're opening up as a remote learning center. Since Aspira can open as a summer school or like a summer camp, are we able in any way to open up under this kind of, skirt around the school part and open up as a remote learning center? And they're charging about $200 a week.
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble hearing you, and I apologize, but I think, you know, again, it might be possible. We're actually exploring different opportunities to make up some of our revenue. The problem is, Sarah, what we're trying to do, like I'll give you an example, we're actually providing very, very, very cheap daycare for our staff that have kids that are not in the ECDC program, but obviously teachers need to be able to teach. It's very hard to teach when you've got other children in your house that you have to take care of. So we're doing a little modeling, if you will. We're starting Monday, and I think we have 14 kids right now. So we are licensed daycare, which is nice. But what we're trying to do is use our, for lack of better terms, underutilized personnel that can't really do as much because of the remote learning environment. And I don't mean to be negative when I say that, but that's the best I can put it.
No, I completely
understand. People are still getting paid. Pardon me?
I understand what you're trying to say.
Yeah. So again, it's very cheap, very inexpensive, but we're trying to, you know, we're pushing this MILC program because our our enrollment, you know, we're basically between 50% and 60% with a certain population. And we know that there's hungry kids out there. So we know if we can reach these kids, which we are trying, and we're going to start Monday by delivering meals to them or using hub stops. That's one solution to helping obviously families, but it's also going to help us with some revenue. So, you know, again, there's a lot to think of, and considering using staff without bringing people in from the outside. Because again, when you start bringing a lot of kids in, you got to maintain ratios. We're trying to do all this without bringing anyone in to help and pay on an hourly basis. It's just, everything is so fluid and changes literally by the day. But we are being very diligent about trying to find other opportunities to, let's just say, help ourselves. And the most important piece of it is help our educators, but also help our families.
Right. Greg, if you need, I can help 2 days a week on Thursdays and Fridays.
Good man. Right. Love that.
Take him up on that offer.
One more question about the meals,
this
Greg.
It's being recorded, Don. I got you now.
I never speak unless I speak the truth.
I know that. Never a doubt. But thank you for that. So let me get into the expenditures.
I think Sarah had another comment, Greg.
I have a question. Sorry. We have no internet in our new house, and I'm on a hotspot, so I'm probably starting to lose connection. There's been, I think, in the world of parents, there's been some conflict about these free meals. Some people are saying allow those that need it to go and get it, but others have said, no, it's going to go to waste if we don't all participate. So can you speak to that? Should we all be going? Should we hold back?
Well, from the business side of me, I want to get in our school to get fed by us. Nothing's going to get wasted because, I guess I can't say that. What we're hoping is we know we have a majority of our students that we could help by providing the meals. It, you know, there's different options. It's not just a bag lunch. But also we're going after, you know, dinners. So dinners are not something that, you know, typically when you think about a school lunch program, it's breakfast and lunch. We're going an extra mile here. We want to provide dinner, and we're doing that. And for those of you who don't know who our nutrition manager is, Peter Cutchin, he's a remarkable young man. And I know if anyone can pull this off and hit high numbers as far as serving our population, he can do it. The bus company's on board. Again, we're doing everything we can. But bottom line is, Sarah, we don't prepare meals except for those that have basically said they want meals. Now, if we get to, for example, Monday, I know there'll be some bumps in the road. Say we get to a stop and the bus is there for 10 minutes. For any meals that come back, we don't technically lose money on that. We get to claim them, but I'm not sure. I'd have to talk to Peter, but I'm not sure you talk about how much waste, you know, what can we do as far as to go to the food bank? I don't believe we'll have a lot of waste because I just know how Peter is, unless people say they want to participate and then they don't show up.
Mm-hmm. So,
if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, I mean, people are pre-ordering the meals, Sarah. So, right. You know, the exact number of people that said they want to participate in this, those are the meals that are being prepared, maybe a few extra. But I think the thing that would be helpful is keep in mind that if a student doesn't qualify for free and reduced, then they're going to have to pay for these meals that are delivered, right? So they're not all free. So if you think about that, the fact that almost 60% of our students qualify for free and reduced, that's really the population that we should have signed up for these meals.
Right.
So, you know, we should have about 600 students signed up and we only have 100. So it's been a challenge getting to those families. And I don't know if it's a lack of understanding. I don't know if it's a matter of pride. I don't know if it's a matter of convenience, but we're trying to make these meals available. We get the sense that, you know, it's possible that once the school year starts and they see other people getting the meals and it's like, oh, how did you get those meals? Well, you need to sign up for them. That we'll probably see that number go up. But it's really that population that we're really trying to target is those kids that qualify for free and reduced meals so that we can ensure that they do have those 3 meals a day.
The district we're offering free meals, is that your competition? I mean, we actually had a bus drive through our neighborhood just handing them out.
But that was in the summer. So the state actually applied for a waiver from the federal government and got it approved, but that no longer is in effect.
Okay.
So now every SCID district and every charter school is only allowed to provide meals to their students.
And it's a pre-order situation?
Yes. I mean, we have to have an estimate of how many to prepare, to your point, to make sure that we limit any waste.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
So that's what I didn't hear in your original question, Sarah. So yeah, there is a big difference. Now that school has started, it's based on your enrollment. So it's almost like we're operating our meal program all over again, but obviously we're taking on wheels.
Right.
Yeah. But
it can't go to everyone.
Right. And Greg, the other piece I think parents have, Sarah, there's a piece of the message that has to get back is that one, the first principle is that we want to get students meals, because I love this idea when we were talking about it in the FOC. one, we got it. We want to be able to get meals. Absolutely. Two, with not having in person today, our bus drivers are just sitting around. So there's nothing, there's no utilization that we're getting out of that, out of those staff members, so to say. I know they're not, you know, but we're basically passing that money through the school without getting any value out of that population. So this is a great way to really close the gap, one, on getting meals to students who need them, and those who may not want to have a meal at home, that's fine. We can, if they're willing to pay for it, great. But two, also get our staff and team members in folks that are not really being used right now, getting them actually utilized through some sort of service and some sort of value through the school. So it's really those two fundamental principles that we could be putting dollars out the door for our bus drivers, and they're just sitting around, and that's just underutilizing all the way around. So I think it's bigger than just the meal piece, but it's also trying to drive efficiencies where there's inefficiencies based on our current situation today.
Margie.
That's a great point.
What is the threshold for school-wide free lunches?
What do you mean the threshold?
Well, there's a number.
In order to become universal,
right?
I believe it's 80%. So when you 80. Hit 80%, you actually can then become a universal site, okay. And everybody gets free. Yeah.
And we're at 60.
Yes.
Around 60.
Around 60. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Great questions. Thank you. So let's talk about our projected expenses. So, you know, you'll see here, again, laid out the same way. Total salaries, budget $6.5 million. It's just a little bit higher than last year. That's because we just added a few teachers for the high school. But it's because right now everything is frozen. So that's the reason why it's not a few $100,000 increase there. Other employment costs, again, that's locked in by the state. The only difference is, you know, the healthcare, that's not driven by the state, but the other OECs, that is driven by the state. So that's $3.7 million. Overall, it's 10.234 is our total salaries in OECs, or 67.51% of our new revenue, which is well within our operating budget goals. Lewis just mentioned it, the total travel, you know, basically, as you can see, you know, we're very limited on what we're going to be doing. And obviously, once we get to the time where I'm presenting a final operating budget, I'll know a lot more about how we're operating. But I didn't want to just take all this money out. I'm hoping that sooner than later, we're going to be back in school and getting back to the old normal. But, you know, you'll see that a lot of my expenses are cut just because of not operating in a traditional school environment. The only thing I didn't cut, because this is state funded, and we actually just got noticed today when I was on a call with all of my peers and Kendall Massett, we got an email from the state saying they are going to allow us to continue to pay the bus companies as long as they're providing work, which we will be, because we're going to be transporting meals. And that's kind of how we ended the year last year. We don't want the bus companies to go out of business. They're a cash business. They need revenue. So they need to be able to run. The nice thing is we have Sutton Bus Company, which is absolutely the best in Delaware. So that's based on, it's basically a pass-through, and then I add a little bit of money on because of summer or extended care program that we have in the summer. Now I could get into every line here, but I don't want to bore everybody. But for the big hitters, again, that's basically this line here. That's, you see, construction building services. So this was just the remaining balance of the construction contract. Everyone knows the construction is done and the high school looks great. But again, without boring everyone to death here, I obviously cut a lot of these expenses based on the number of school days that we potentially could lose. But when it came to fixed cost, there are things that are fixed costs like debt. you know, we're still going to be operating into buildings and things like that. Equipment leases, those are true numbers. So, like instructional services, that's basically for substitutes. I don't think we're going to be using any substitutes for a while. So that's why that number's basically half of what it was last year. See if there's anything that sticks out. So even with the utilities, obviously we're not having that many people in the buildings. Doors don't get opened up as much, but obviously I felt like I could safely reduce these expenditures based on the usage of the building. This here, $275,000, you'll see, is for the large copiers and all the Chromebooks that we, we have one-to-one learning for our students. This is basically a fixed cost. This is what we pay for the building lease at the high school. And then, again, training, I dropped it just because we're not going to be doing a whole lot of training. It's hopefully, again, we'll get there sooner than later as far as professional development, maybe teachers and staff traveling again. But
it's
overall,
not that we're not doing it, but we're not doing it with outside consultants and with expenses. Right. Yeah,
there is still professional development. So again, there's a drop here. It's 2.0 million versus 2.3 last year, but with reason. And the same thing here, we got total supplies, materials. It's a lot of, as you can see, office supplies. I dropped the food. I know the food will be obviously a lot less expensive. But again, these things are I'm gonna watch closely, and I'll adjust once we get to the operating budget, the final operating budget, I should say. Didn't really do a whole lot with the instructional supplies because teachers still have to teach. We didn't increase it, but we didn't really cut it. Just again, because that's probably an area we don't really want to cut. Same with textbooks, we just left it flat. This is having to do with two facilities, so I thought it's necessary to have a little bit of an increase there. But overall, you'll see total supplies, we're coming in at 730,000 versus last year of 908,000. And then your capital expenditures here, these projectors and all, this was primarily the last bit of the work for the high school, but 145,000, not much. Go ahead.
Hey, Greg, one line item that I just want to pull out is, no, you're good. You can keep it there, is the instructional supplies.
Yes.
We kept that. That's absolutely flat this year.
Yeah.
But I want to just point out that a year or two ago, it was we raised that almost 65%, and felt it was still very important to keep that part of our funding, the instructional supplies that supports our teachers and our staff for giving instruction. It was really important that that line item stayed at least the same, that they continue to receive the support that they need, and we continue to fund that. So just one of the pieces of line items that we, I want to just point out that we still feel very strongly that as we look at the places we need to, kind of manage from an expense base, that was one piece that we wanted to make sure stayed at least where it was at, and that the teachers still got the support that they needed.
Yeah, thank you. And then just the last big bucket, again, this is total capital outlay property. We kind of talked about it already, but you'll see with our bond debt service, we already paid the 1.3, and then the private investment money that we now pay on. But that gives us 1.48 million for the year. So you'll see a big decrease for overall expenses, 15.66 million versus last year, 17.26. But again, a lot of that was because we had construction too. Most of the construction was done last year. So I know, again, that's a lot of quick talking and all. Is there any questions on the expense side?
Greg, did I miss the item you spoke about earlier where you said that you had good news? And I think it was connected to the local funding or something from the schools, I guess.
For Donald, are you talking expense or Now I'm going to get back to what I said I would get back to.
Yes.
Yeah. So I want to share with you all that.
It wasn't an expense.
No, it was revenue there that I said I would get back to the local school district. So before I do that, hold that thought, please. Is there any questions about, I'm glad you reminded me, Donald, but is there any questions on the expenditures? That basically will wrap up the FY21 preliminary operating budget. Awesome. So, go ahead.
So let's go ahead and approve the reports, and then you can just finish wrapping up your discussion so we can move up to the head of school report. So, I mean, obviously a lot of information because we needed to close the year with the June financial report. Then we're starting our next fiscal year with a July number. And then we also get a view of the total preliminary budget for this upcoming year. So three pieces of information. I know that kind of probably number overload. As Greg continues to indicate through his review, really good finish, strong finish of the year last year, even with all the construction going on. And we're starting the next year with significant adjustments. I mean, $2 million delta, it is certainly a significant adjustment, even though part of it can be attributed to not having the funds for construction. It is still a significant reduction. So, but hopefully that will put us in a strong footing once again to really manage appropriately for this upcoming school year. So if there's no other questions, I will appreciate a motion to approve the financial reports that submitted.
And the operating budget.
The operating budget.
Motion to approve both.
There would be three reports and then preliminary budget. So thank you, Guillermina. Do I have a second?
Second, Pesci.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Thank you. So reports approved. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Greg. And just let's wrap it up.
Okay. So I just want to mention again, we did get yesterday, I found out and I verified with DOE because the local school district allocations expenditures were actually available on the system that we keep an eye on. And it was quite good news. It actually looks like our primary driver is Christina School District. But it looks like that funding is actually going to be increased. I had used a decrease of $400 per student. I'm almost certain, based on my conversations and getting verification from DOE, that number is actually going to increase by $200 a student. So that was it made my day very happy considering what else happened. But, we've asked the team to be very patient with us, and it's a hard pill to swallow when you're asking people to come back and work as hard as they do. And look, we need to freeze your salaries. But I will tell you that even though it's not confirmed, and DOE was very cautious with me saying, look, it's not confirmed, but we feel the numbers are accurate. I do think we're going to, after we get locked in November, and truly know what our funding is, what our unit count, our number of students, I think we're going to be able to deliver like we've always delivered, at least some sort of increase, if not full increases, which would make everybody very happy. And that's been Margie and I's goal all along. Again, I think it's something that's warranted, especially after how hard they work, the teachers. But I'm very much hopeful based on what happened yesterday. So I just wanted to show you that now this number is significantly higher, but ultimately you can see what happens down here. That number is now our cash balance. Again, this is my projections, and I'm conservative, I'll tell you. We'll be over almost at 2.1. But I also embedded, just to see what it looks like, a 4% increase overall, just on the salary number on the next sheet. So I'm confident that we're going to be able to deliver some good news, and I know that would make a lot of team members very happy. Unfortunately, we just have to wait until it's confirmed.
Well, not only that, I think my concern at this moment will be what is really the strategy that is used for the unit count. I think that's what's really going to drive our ability to do, you know, one thing or another. So let's hope that also that gets resolved in a way that it is manageable and allow us to really represent the active participation from our students in this process. I'm still, you know, very concerned about that.
Yeah. Well, we got to keep a good eye on the revenue generated by the meal program and all that other, all our programs too. But it's certainly more favorable, this budget, knowing what I know yesterday, even though the preliminary budget has already been presented to the FOC, I know it's going to look better.
That certainly, at least today, looks like outstanding news. And, you know, let's hope that everything comes together in terms of validating the unit count, because all of that is based on your 1,000, you know, because there's been talks about utilizing previous year's numbers. But my concern for us, we are growing, we're a growing school, we're just opening a high school, that doesn't work for us.
Yep.
So we need to find a way to represent the true real numbers, and, you know, certainly hoping that everybody will come back, everybody actively participates, so everybody can get counted.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Once again, a lot of information, a lot of details. But once again, it looks like we're really, once again, a very strong footing for this upcoming year. And, you know, let's keep it that way. And as it pertains to the grant, we'll make the commitment to provide an update on how things are going with expansion campaign at the October meeting. At the September meeting, there's lots of moving parts, but certainly Lynn and I are making a tremendous efforts to keep moving with the grant writing process, as well as reaching out to potential prospects, as well as looking into potential social media. So there's sort of three-pronged strategy of ultimately how to get the money. So, but more to come as we continue to kind of work behind the scenes and develop the strategy. But I very much appreciate on your report that you is highlighting and separating what belongs to the high school. So I think that information is going to be critical as we move forward.
Yeah.
Okay, Margie, head of school report.
Greg, can you make me co-host?
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you. We're going to go ahead and go straight to the policy. So I shared this with you a couple of days ago, and I shared it with you on Wednesday, and in my mind, I thought I shared it with you on Tuesday, and in my mind, I thought it was Wednesday, but it's been that kind of week. But this is one of the things that came out of the legal webinar that we participated in, all the charter leaders. And it was great because we were able to get some guidance from Saul Ewing and our attorneys there, and have consistency across the charter schools, so that we didn't have to sort of create things from scratch. But I thought initially it was going to be multiple policies. I think I had prepared you guys for reviewing multiple policies. It's really sort of all rolled into this COVID-19 addendum, because it's a very unique situation, and we're all very hopeful that this is going to have an end to it. So obviously this policy will also become inactive at some point. But in order for us to, you know, be able to move forward with the school year, in order for us to really be able to communicate to the team members exactly what the procedures are going to be in certain situations, in order to make sure that everybody is kept safe, these policies need to go into effect. So I won't, you know, since you guys got it ahead of time, I won't read them, but it will just go by the different categories So the first one is about, let me see, I'm just trying to navigate here. The first one is about travel and return to work policy. So there's a lot of questions about, do we have the right to basically regulate travel? Now, when it comes to work-related travel, you know, we're going to be prohibiting that, obviously, because that creates a higher risk. But also when employees are taking, personal time, whether vacation, during breaks, they need to be able to make HR aware if they are, going to be traveling outside of the United States or on any public transportation, such as cruise ships or trains or planes, et cetera. And so that lays that out as far as what the protocol will be, as far as notification, and then what would be required for them to return back to work. So there's a difference between international travel and domestic travel. And domestic travel is where we talk about the public transportation, the modes of transportation are really critical. And then obviously, as you guys know, because, we've been on the list of other states, but, periodically, there are guidelines that say that you need to quarantine if you travel from one state to another. So that's also something that's going to have to be considered in this policy, since that's really changes all the time. So that's the first part. If you have any questions about, let me just finish the return to work from home. So if the employee's job can be done remotely, then they will be able to continue to work from home and be paid while they're going through this quarantine period. However, it's important to note that if their job cannot be done remotely, then they will be in a no pay status. They could use paid time off if they have that available. And so that's also part of the protocol as far as obviously the message here is really discouraging people from traveling to places that are high risk, right? Hot zones. If you're going to travel to a hot zone, then you're going to need to understand that you're then going to need to quarantine when you come back. And if you can't do your job remotely, then that means you're going to do it in an unpaid status. Now, obviously, this is going to have to heavily rely on an honor system because we can't necessarily, monitor everybody's comings and goings. Although, unfortunately, in this day and age with social media, even if, it's interesting how very little is kept secret. But that is part of the code of conduct or the handbook that the team members will be provided. Any questions about that part, about travel and return to work? Okay. So then protocols for working on the campus. So one of the things that we'll be doing is a daily health screening form. So it's a set of questions. It's not very lengthy, but do you have a temperature? Are you feeling sick? It's, very short and sweet, but this is part of the protocol that has been working really effectively. Greg even shared with us that one of the reasons that our construction project over at the West Campus was able to complete on time was because the company, the Nolan company, actually implemented this procedure. So there was this health screening that needed to happen, and therefore they were able to continue to move forward with the work without disruption. So making sure that that's part of the process, obviously following the other protocols as far as social distancing and sanitation and things like that. Also putting in there about, we have in there about the having masks. So masks are required for indoor facility when you're indoors, and then also required outdoors when you are not able to maintain the social distancing of 6 feet. And then also taking health and safety precautions. Once again, just more detail about exactly what that means, not just inside the school, but then also out in public, because obviously that's where there could also be contamination. The PPE is letting everybody know what it is that they need to wear. In some of the listening sessions, there were some questions about, can I wear a face shield instead of a face mask? And we wanted to be sure that that was very explicit in the policy that you can wear both, but the shield without the mask is not effective. And the restrooms, using the elevators, making sure that we only have one person at a time in the elevator, in the meetings, having that social distancing and still wearing your mask. Meals, obviously making sure that you wash your hands after you're done eating. And then last but not least is just letting people know that this is a policy, and so failure to adhere to it would may be subject to disciplinary action. So this is a pretty standard template, like I said. And so any questions, this does require your approval.
This is Donald. I move that we accept the document as read without any changes.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay, great.
Thank you. Can you now see the next document?
Who was it that second? I'm sorry, I missed the name.
I think it was Marisa.
Okay, thank you.
Can you guys now see the second document?
No.
No. I guess you have to stop sharing and then share. Okay. All right. So took care of the first item. So enrollment, just want to let you know that actually this has changed as of like an hour before the board meeting. So we're at 1,047. So our 100% goal this year was 1,045. So we are going to be meeting our 100% goal. We hope to maybe get to 101%, but we probably will not get to the 105%. And there's a couple of different things that obviously are playing into that. Number one, at the West Campus, we had initially had planned to start with 129th graders. As of right now, we have 79. We then came up with the creative idea of introducing the eighth grade scholars program, which was really well received. Now, there were certain criteria and qualifications for that program because it is an accelerated learners program. So we have 23 students in that program. So at the West Campus, where we had planned to start with 120, we actually are ending up at 102. So, and now at the East Campus, obviously, we need to be sensitive to classroom sizes and making sure that that remains manageable. So, and then also another sort of barrier right now to trying to increase enrollment is that, nationwide, there's a shortage of laptops and Chromebooks. And so right now we are concerned that if we try to be more aggressive on the enrollment side, that we may not be able to secure the laptops, the Chromebooks necessary for the students to be successful with remote learning. So it's sort of like it's a difficult situation to be in. But once again, 100% of our goal is something that we should be very proud of. I think we've always gotten accustomed to exceeding that to 105%. But I think we should be content with landing where we're landing. Now, obviously, there's still opportunities for movement. We may see movement either way. Since the unit count has been moved to November 13th, we'll see what happens with that. Special announcement I do want to share with you that for those of you that have been with us since back in 2018, we had participated in the top workplace survey that the News Journal sponsors for the first time, and we actually were recognized as a top workplace. We then did not do the survey in 2019. We decided to do it again in 2020, and we did get recognized as a top workplace again. So when you're in the building, you'll see some of the visuals and some of the recognition plaques and decals, et cetera. But we shared that with the team when they returned last week. So very proud of that. Obviously, that's a reflection of what we're doing and how they feel about what we're doing. So that was good. School reopening. So I just want to, you guys have already seen the reopening plan. Just a couple of things I just wanted to point out. So I guess I gotta stop sharing and then go to that is, I'm not going to go through the whole presentation, but I do want to point out this slide in particular, is that keep in mind that right now the expectations that we have set with our community is that we're either going to go with scenario one or scenario two. Scenario one is where we would start with remote for the first 4 weeks, which would be August 31st through the 25th. We would then transition to hybrid for 8 weeks, September 28th through November 19th. But then we would end the first semester, the first half of the year with remote as well from November 30th through December 18th. So that is one scenario, but if the certain necessary conditions are not met that we outlined in the plan, then it's possible that we would stay with scenario two, which is we would possibly stay remote all the way through December 18th. So we're continuing to monitor where we stand with those conditions, with the testing protocol, and where we are with the infection rate in the county, and securing the necessary resources in order to move to hybrid. So we'll continue to keep you updated on how that goes. The other thing is, go back to, one of the things that I wanted to share with you, and I shared this in the CEO presentation that I did to the team on Monday, is a comparison of where we landed. So we issued our reopening plan on August 1st, which was earlier than most districts and schools. So just wanted to give you this sort of glance of where we landed. So we're listed last year. And so as you can see, most school districts and charters in, you know, in our close proximity of us is they delayed their opening. So we stayed with our opening on August 31st. Others delayed it by a couple of weeks. So with that, they then, for the most part, then decided to start with 6 weeks of remote, which then puts them on a timeline of possibly transitioning to hybrid around October 19th. And, you know, with the exception of Charter School of Wilmington, that has basically come out and said, we're going to be remote through at least January 4th. Eastside is definitely another exception where they are going with, they gave their families choice, and about 20-25% of their families chose to have face-to-face. So they're K-4, they're doing actually 5 days of face-to-face, but they're also testing their staff and their students every week. So that's another example to sort of be watching. But so right now, this is where our plan sort of lines up with other districts and other charter schools.
Margie, were you trying to share that document or just reading from it?
Oh, I did share it. It didn't show up. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I was trying to share it. No. That's a feature they need to improve on this thing. Can you see it now?
Now we can.
Okay. So this is the example. And I just grabbed the school districts in New Castle County, and then I just grabbed, you know, Newark Charter versus Charter School of Wilmington, and then Eastside, since they each three of them sort of came up with very different plans. And then, you know, the other charter schools, the other districts have really fallen into one of these different models. So, but I think you can see for the most part, for the safety of our students and our team, I think everybody's on the same page as far as starting remote and really sort of easing into the school year and really monitoring whether or not some of the predictions are true, that infections may increase in the fall, and, you know, sort of seeing whether that pans out before we start moving to a hybrid. So let me stop sharing that. Go back to this. And then lastly, I just wanted to, I'll just tell you what the next steps are, and then we'll go back to the presentation for the both, to talk about the two pandemics. But, you know, we're wrapping up professional development. So unlike a lot of other schools, we really stayed to our schedule and our calendar. So on the 17th of August, the team reported back to work. They got right to work doing professional development and getting ready for the school year. We had the welcome back events this week, all done virtually. And we distributed Chromebooks to the students that needed them. and we have been, we finalized all the technology logins and access today. And I misspelled that, preparations. And we're continuing with preparations for the hybrid learning, which is obviously purchasing the necessary PPE, but we also got very creative, you know, like Greg mentioned in his update, you know, we have a team that wants to be, you know, wants to be contributing to the success of the school. And some of their jobs may be right now, you know, underutilized because of the services that they provide. But one of the things that we did to really, you know, tap into those talents is we're building our own PPE, like our dividers for the tables and the desk, and you know the different shields and things, so that we can create these safe spaces. We have a lot of great talented people on our team, so they have actually been putting those things together. They went and purchased the materials, and they've been assembling those things. So we're very fortunate because, number one, it's very difficult to find those items on the market. You know, there's a high demand for them, so even if you get a hold of an order, you probably will not get it in time. And then obviously the cost is a lot higher. So the fact that we were able to get our team to help make these things is great. And then obviously we're gonna continue to evaluate the timeline and make the necessary adjustments on whether, on when and if we move to hybrid. And obviously making sure that that's the best decision and the safest decision for our team and our students. Lastly, I just want to go back to the one presentation that I gave to the team when we opened, and this is it. I just want to sort of give you the same message that I gave the team, and you know, just making sure that we all understand that as a community, we have to be dealing with two pandemics. Obviously, all of our time and attention for the most part has been spent on COVID-19. But, you know, when you think about that pandemic, that has an end in sight. You know, there will be a vaccine, you know, found, that it will be a vaccine tested and proven and available in the near future. And so there's going to be a resolution to that one. But the other pandemic that we can't ignore, when you think about our mission as a school to have a positive impact on our community, to be an inclusive community, it would be very hypocritical of us to not also address the issue of racism. So one of the things that we've done as a community, as you know, is shortly after the George Floyd incident and his death, obviously that led to protest throughout the country as well as in our state. We then issued, you know, we issued a statement of support, and then that led to different social justice discussions on our team. Several of us have been reading different books that have been recommended to us by our librarian on the topic, and we've been participating in these different book study and social justice discussions to just really continue to talk about how we as educators can really help to sort of be a part of this movement. But the thing that, you know, we want to be sure that we're doing is, these are the books, by the way, that I read, but one of the things that we shared, and I just want you to be thinking about this as well, is one of the things I really got out of the reading I did this summer is the distinct difference between saying you're not racist versus being anti-racist. So Aspida is going to be taking the stance of being anti-racist. And what that means is that, you know, when you claim to be not racist, you basically are neither, I'm not a racist, but neither am I aggressively against racism. So there's no neutrality in the racism struggle. One either allows racial inequities to persevere as a racist or confronts racial inequities as an anti-racist. There is no in-between safe space of not racist, and the claim of not racist neutrality is a mask of racism. It's a very bold statement, but I think it's a very true statement by Dr. Kendi, who wrote the book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. Before he wrote that book, he wrote a book called Stamped, and that is a book that he then reissued with the help of another author named Jason Reynolds. And Stamped is a book that really takes a different look at our history and really helps to bring an understanding as to where racism started, how it started, and why it started, and why it was justified in some people's minds, and why it continues to be so entrenched in our culture and our country. So if we think that our students aren't thinking about this, if we think that this hasn't impacted our students, then we're really kidding ourselves, because it has. So, you know, they're dealing with both pandemics, and so we need to be addressing both. And one of the things we'll be doing at the West Campus is having a book study. We'll be purchasing the book Stamped, and all of the eighth graders and ninth graders will be reading it along with the team, and we'll be having book study discussions throughout the year. Also, what's interesting is Matt Meyer, the Newcastle County executive, he is working on actually having Dr. Kendi come to Delaware, or hopefully this can be done in person, or it may have to be virtual, but basically having an opportunity to meet Dr. Kendi and be able to ask him questions and be a part of a discussion group on his books and the subject of racism. So he's inviting school districts and charters that are interested to participate in that. And he's also offered to purchase books for our students in high school. So, you know, I think that we're seeing throughout the country and in our state that within different organizations, really those that are being proactive, you know, they're taking a stance on this. And it has to go beyond just a statement of support. It has to be something actionable. And this summer, I got an opportunity to interact with students from throughout the state that were going through sort of an advocacy boot camp. And I served on a panel. And it was interesting that students from throughout the state and all three counties, one of the questions they asked all the panelists is, how can I talk to my principal when I go back to school and advocate for us to be doing something about racism? And when we gave them pointers as to what they can do to really advocate for that, you know, some of them came right out and said, I don't think that my principal's going to listen to me. I think my principal's a racist. I don't think that my school really is going to support this, because they're not very diverse. And it was really sad to sort of see that and to hear that from the students. And, you know, I think we should be proud that at Aspida, I feel that we're doing a lot of good things to help our students feel included and to have the diversity that we have. But, you know, I think that this is a time where we really need to not just, you know, talk the talk, but we got to walk the walk, and we got to be advocates on their behalf. So that's a statement I want to leave you with. I think, you know, I think it's important that the board, as well as the team, and now our students all sort of hear the same message. And that is my update. Any questions or comments?
Thank you.
Go ahead, Anna.
Margie, it's wonderful. So, oh my goodness, thank you.
But I do want to
come back for something else.
Sure.
I have been speaking with some of our first grade parents, and some mm-hmm. were not able to get the Chromebooks for their children. And there was a little concern with that. They were getting some iPads, and they wanted to, there was just concern regarding that.
So they weren't able to get their Chromebooks, so they got an iPad instead?
Yes.
Okay.
And they wanted Chromebooks for their children.
Was that part of the...
Yeah, Marge, I can talk to that. So we obviously have a shortage. We've got, unfortunately, like everyone else, I was telling Margie yesterday, I got a text from another school asking if they could purchase 50 from us. And I said, we're waiting for 340 right now. But what I can tell you is, Amber was involved in this as well with INL. All the apps that are needed work on the iPads. I think it's an adjustment. I'm not an IT guy, mm-hmm. But obviously we will be distributing new Chromebooks as soon as we get them, but we literally ran out. It's just awful. Everything we've ordered has been delayed. Our swivels, it's just the companies can't keep up. But I was, you know, on the treadmill the other morning, and I saw the nationwide shortage of mm-hmm. laptops. I said, yep, we're all living it. But I do believe that Amber and Ina were very diligent about what they were doing. And I know it came up in one of my meetings that all the apps that the students need to do work.
Yeah, work on the iPad.
So, yeah.
And I think we targeted kindergarten and first grade for the iPads just because we felt that the younger students would be more comfortable with that. But yeah, and that's the issue is once we get these Chromebooks in, and that's why I said within the enrollment, the reason we're hesitant to enroll more students is that we already have students that don't get their have their Chromebooks. So it is a challenge. We're fortunate though that we had those iPads though that as a backup.
If I can just backtrack for just a second, Margie, I loved what you were saying about the two pandemics, and I heard it also as a parent during the orientation. I was really, really pleased with that. And so I spoke to you and Lourdes a little bit about, I know as a new member, I'm to do some sort of committee work, and I am excited to dig into that, and also am excited to learn about what kind of possibility we have within the board of having a committee about diversity and equity, and just looking a little bit more deeply as the board into this topic. And so we talked about it a little, and I just wondered what your thoughts are.
Yeah, you know, I forgot. Thank you for reminding me. I forgot to show that slide, Rebecca, but that is part of what I presented to the team is establishing a DEI, committee work group. We already do have a social justice group that has formed itself over the summer, and Stephanie, our librarian, has been overseeing that. I participated in their meeting today, and I tell you, I love what they're doing. Like, they really are sort of examining our practices and to look at it through a lens of equity. So the discussion today was really beautiful. And so we wanted to see what they're doing so that when we introduce the DEI group, that we're not being counterproductive, that we are working together. But we are going to be sending out a communication to invite people that want to be part of this committee to join us. And we obviously want to have a very diverse group of people, different stakeholders representing different voices, so that we can continue to really examine ourselves, you know, look at our policies, look at our hiring practices, look at our curriculum, and really see whether or not we are delivering and doing what we mean to do, whether our intent is good, but the outcome may not be the right outcome. So, I definitely have you in mind. I would love to have you participate.
Great. And
just to close on that, I mean, Rebecca, since you and I talk about it as well, I did loop back with Margie, and actually I also connected with Mr. Patton because of, you know, some of the training that the staff is going to be going through. So one of the things that we talk about is when that is ready to be, you know, delivered, we'll have the opportunity to at least invite the board. I know there's going to be constraints in terms of people's availability because these are at least 2 days of training that happen during the day. So the mechanics and logistics around it might not be as straightforward, but I absolutely supported your request, and Margie and I agree that let's align, whatever happened with the staff, have you as representative of the board and see what is possible. But, you know, one of the things that we might want to consider is, you know, potentially all of us also read the stamp book and you know, have a be part of our board discussion. That certainly we can process that through executive session in terms of, you know, the discussion and the dialogue. You know, as board member, we need to be as sensitive as well, and we need to be as prepared. And I think that is silence is really not our role. It really needs to be anti-racism. That's who we need to be. So it's something to consider. So, but I will follow with Margie on that in terms of, I guess the additional cost of including a copy of the book for the board. But I think that is a start. That would be a start for us. And I think that we should commit to that as well. So go ahead, Rebecca, you had another question.
Oh, no, I was just building on Margie. You were kind of listing a couple of areas that you're looking at. And I know at my school where I teach, we're looking at these things too. And I know discipline policies is something we're looking at really hard, and also placement policies because we have sort of a tiered situation where kids come in at a seminar level or CEP college prep or accelerated or whatever. And I anecdotally have noticed when I teach seminar level classes for freshmen, a high percentage of my students of color don't belong in that class. They belong in a higher level class. Mm-hmm. And I've just sort of realized like, oh, I need to like from the beginning really be as invisibly as I can, mm-hmm. you know, monitoring that and moving up students who need to be moved up more quickly. But just adding on to the list of things to deal with.
That's awesome. No, I appreciate that. One thing I did learn, you know, these books that we've read this summer are really heavy subjects. Like I learned that reading them alone would have been really uncomfortable because you almost need somebody to talk to, even if it's just one person, two people as a work, as a book study, but you really need to be able to unpack what you read with somebody and sort of share thoughts. And, you know, that's been really healthy. So this summer I've actually had different book studies going on with different people so that it's been really healthy conversation. So I love the fact that if the board is willing to participate in this, I will be sure to secure the books. I become an e-reader myself, so I like reading my books on my phone now. But if you guys want the hard copies, I'll be sure to. I like it because you can take notes and everything. And if you don't know a word, you can look it up. So it's helped me to expand my vocabulary. So, yeah, but I definitely will get you copies.
I like the real thing. I'm horrible on the computer. Yeah,
Margie, call me old school. Yeah, I'd rather have a physical book.
I gotcha.
Just sharing additional thoughts. I'm really proud that we had the foresight to address this head on, mm-hmm. and not shy away from it. Really, really proud. I know in my own organization we've just flat out said it. Racism will not be accepted, and I really appreciated the strong message, and I'm proud that. That is really, you know, as a board and as an organization, as a school, that we are taking that very same stance. So great job, great work. Awesome. Very proud to be a part of the team and take that stance. Great.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions for Margie? Margie, one area that I know it has kind of had bubbled up before, and I know we're not ready to speak to that, but is assessments and how we're going to manage that. So let's put that on the queue, because I know that we're trying also to get the academic committee to meet and process that information. So that probably would be a great topic for us to talk about and process at the September meeting.
Sure. Yep.
And I think the timing will be more appropriate because, I mean, right now we're just getting started and getting an assessment, getting our own assessment about assessment, how assessments are going to be done and how does that fit into this equation and this environment. So,
sure.
But just kind of heads up, that probably would be a good topic to bring to the board in September.
Okay.
Anything else? You know, once again, board, my deepest appreciation for you, you know, continue to be here, wanting to be here and really supporting the school and being present. Very much appreciate it. I mean, the journey on this school year just starting. The staff, I know, have worked so, so hard. I had the opportunity to join one of the return to school interactions earlier in the week. So kudos to Margie and the staff in terms of how they have managed with technology. It's unbelievable how you went to the one general session and then you click and went to math or Spanish or what have you. So they're certainly being very creative about trying to make it the best experience they can for the students and the families. So so hopefully all will work out. So we'll monitor very closely though, make sure that we don't let anybody stray. You know, none of 1,047 students.
47 students.
Yeah, none of them straight. So thank you, everybody. So do I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Donald.
Do I have a second?
Second, Santiago.
Thank you. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Okay, well, good evening, everybody. Thank you so much. Aye. We'll talk again.
Thank you.
Thank you.